Welcome to Local Matters, Health Matters. Each week we bring you conversations that help you and your family better understand important health topics and offer practical tools to improve your health and well-being. Today's topic is one that affects nearly every family at some point, and it's helping children manage big emotions. Every child experiences frustration, disappointment, anxiety, and anger, but learning how to handle those feelings in healthy ways is one of the most important life skills that we can teach. So joining us today for our conversation is Abby Fowler, and Abby is a licensed professional counselor with Wildly Curative Counseling. Abby, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Abby, if you don't care to tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and about Wildly Curative to kind of get started, and then we'll dive in.
Sure. So I have been a counselor for 5 years now. I've been licensed for a little over 2 years. Me and my husband lived in Chattanooga, so that's where I got started, but we both moved back home last year, so I've been in my private practice now with the ladies at Wildly Curative since last November.
Nice. Chattanooga, that's a big town coming back to Cookeville, all good area then.
Yeah.
And then your office is where at?
So we are in Allgood. We're right next to the Sonic out in Allgood.
Okay.
In an old house.
Very nice. Everybody should know.
Yeah.
That's right on Main Street, isn't it?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right on Main Street. So let's talk about children's behaviors and children's emotions, because I know that that's where your expertise lies, is helping them with those big emotions. So it just seems like children today are experiencing more anxiety, more emotional stress than ever before. Is that something that you're seeing as well in your practice?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So then when we talk about emotional resilience, or, you know, having a child be able to mold those emotions or control those emotions, I guess as adults we call it that, what exactly does that mean when we say resilient, emotionally resilient?
Yeah. Whenever I think of an emotionally resilient child, I picture someone who is able to feel their feelings and who allows themselves to be angry, sad, mad, happy, all the feelings, and know how to handle them.
Okay.
How to talk about them and how to identify them.
Okay. Is there a difference then between having emotions and then behaviors?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There is. Okay. Because I think sometimes people put those together.
Right.
Especially parents.
Absolutely.
So, okay. Absolutely. So being resilient in that way as a child then is just recognizing all those emotions. That's what I heard you say.
Yes. Okay. Absolutely.
So some children seem to bounce back quickly after disappointment, while others struggle for much longer. Why is that?
I think for some kids, whether it's disappointment or other big feelings, if it's modeled for them how to feel it, it's a little bit easier to bounce back, to know that this feeling won't last forever. Because when we're in the feeling, it feels like it will last forever. So having the tools to know this is a feeling, this is normal, I think that helps kids bounce back.
And I mean, it's going to be part of your life for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You know, disappointment or whatever the feeling may be, right? So at some point, you know, you have to be able to recognize and handle it.
Right.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, I had a segue moment there.
Yep, I know it. I knew it was coming.
You know, and I think about social media.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so emotions on social media, they are, what I see is very, the pendulum swings. I'm either laughing or I'm very sad. There's not a lot of in between. You feel like on social media.
I agree.
Okay, so when children are exposed to that, it just made me think of this because you said feeling all the emotions. Can you expand on that?
Yeah.
Like, you know, not just happy, not just sad. There's all this stuff in between.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's something I work with kids on a lot, is we might feel just a little happy, or we might feel super excited, ecstatic. We might feel frustrated. We might feel furious. And so kind of building off what you're saying with social media, I think that stuff follows us home. We don't just leave it with our friends. It follows us home. And so kind of like what we were saying about bouncing back too, it's kind of, it can be harder for kids to bounce back because there's not a lot of separation from the stuff causing the big feelings.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I just was thinking that out loud. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Abby.
Yeah.
So is it normal for children to have big emotional reactions as they're developing as a child?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And something I'm learning, there's a model where it says, especially when they're small, every 6 months, kids go through a big change. So they'll be pretty regulated, and then they'll, like in another 6 months' time, they'll be dysregulated.
Mm-hmm.
And so they balance. And as they get older, the time between that bounce lasts a little bit longer, where they're more stable for longer.
Hmm.
But kids, absolutely, it's very developmentally appropriate to have super big feelings and reactions.
That's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just part of figuring out.
I mean, I only had boys. So, you know, my boys were
sure.
big feelings all the time. Very active, very big feelings. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that can be a, and you know, you do hear parents say, my kid is very active or very
dramatic.
I
use the word dramatic.
That's good.
Yeah.
But what I'm hearing is that could be just a developmental stage.
Absolutely.
That they're going through. Okay.
And them wanting, I think that's part of them wanting to be heard, like, take mm-hmm. me seriously. This is a big deal to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to do this. Yeah, like any behavior is just trying to get attention and trying to get a need met.
Very true. How can parents tell the difference between age-appropriate emotional ups and downs and something that might benefit from more of a professional support? Mm,
I really like this question. I think, I mean, maybe it's because I'm biased because I am a therapist. I think anybody can benefit from it. I think
yes,
any kid,
absolutely.
No matter what, even if it is appropriate, I think it can be a benefit. But to answer the question, I think if it's impacting the kid in multiple areas of life, at home, with mm-hmm. school, with peers, where they just don't seem like themselves,
mm-hmm.
I think that's whenever I would start to think, okay, maybe we need another perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good advice.
I like how you say another perspective. So for that professional support.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, parents often will also say, you know, like in my clinic practice, you know, my kid goes from 0 to 60 emotionally. You know, why do some kids experience emotions so intensely?
Mm.
Is there a cause? Is there just development?
Yeah. Ooh. Can we pause for this one?
Yeah, we can. We're just pausing. Now you're back. So then, when a child is having a meltdown or an emotional outburst, what's the best way for parents to respond to that?
What I always recommend to the parents that I work with is to do their own work on regulating themselves. And practicing it regularly so that when they're in that moment, they can model for the kid what they want them to do. So to say, like, I'm gonna go walk away and take 3 deep breaths, and then I'll come back. The best thing they can do, I think I heard this from one of my professors, was to be a thermostat, not a thermometer. So mm-hmm. a thermostat, you set it, and it stays the same temperature, but a thermometer goes up and down. And so if a parent could be a thermostat, they mm-hmm. stay steady.
Great.
They don't have a
bumper
big
sticker.
Reaction. Mm-hmm. Right?
We have bumper sticker moments. That was a bumper sticker moment. I
trademark.
Like it. It really, I mean, you should. So, yeah, a thermostat versus a thermometer.
Mm-hmm. And that's hard to do.
Yep.
It
for
is.
Sure.
And I see the kids being the thermometer. You know, mm-hmm. they go into a situation and then all of a sudden, I'm
yeah.
hot or I'm cold.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
They do what they see.
They do.
And they want to, like I said earlier, they want to get a reaction. Any attention is good attention.
Mm-hmm.
To a child, yeah.
Mm-hmm, that's to a true. Child, yeah.
So then what are some of the responses that unintentionally make those situations worse?
Mm.
So you talked about the parent being the thermostat. So what would be the opposite of that?
Mm. I think what I would recommend... Oh, sorry, hold on.
No, you're good, yeah. What would make a situation worse with that child?
I think... either totally just walking away and ignoring,
yeah,
you know.
Because they're wanting that attention.
Because they're wanting the attention. Yeah. Blowing up, right? Raising your voice, losing your cool. And it's hard to do. Like, being a parent is the hardest thing you can do. So we're not going to be perfect. Mm-hmm. I don't expect the parents I work with to be perfect. But just anything that you can do to make the child know that you hear them, you're on their level. But, you know, we have our limits and expectations too.
We do.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, you don't always know what the best response is.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes it takes a minute to be able to give a response for mm-hmm. sure. So many parents want to protect their children from disappointment. And I feel like we hear that more and more and more mm-hmm. In today's society. Is it okay for kids to experience frustration and failure?
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of development. And mm-hmm. like you said earlier, that's just a part of life.
It is.
That's just something that they're going to feel. And the more that they experience these things and they see themselves bounce back, be able to handle it, the more confident they're going to be next time. So if we protect them from that, we're preventing a learning experience.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I was thinking we learn from those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's what shapes and molds you into, you know, who you turn into. But you hear the saying a lot, everybody, you know, not everybody deserves a trophy.
Yeah.
Right. Because you have to experience outcomes, whatever they may be.
You do. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that for the disappointment part. Because you do see children that are very successful that have a hard time with disappointment.
Absolutely.
Because they are maybe very smart or, you know, very mm-hmm. gifted athletically.
Right.
And then they experience that and they don't know what to do.
Right. And it affects self-esteem.
Absolutely. So self-esteem.
Mm-hmm. So more whenever we come back, we'll talk more about building resilience. Welcome back to Local Matters, Health Matters. We're here with Nikki, and she's a psychiatric mental health nurse. And we've been talking about ADHD. And in our last segment, we kind of talked about, you know, responses that tend to make the situation worse when, you know, we're talking about parents and children with ADHD. So let's talk about emotional regulation and some practical skills that families can begin using right away. So first off, Nikki, what exactly do we mean by emotional regulation?
So emotional regulation is kind of what it sounds like, regulating our emotions. So we all have emotions. They all cause some type of bodily response. It is known that people with ADHD can feel things a little more intensely than others. And so a lot of times it's that emotional surge and not being regulated that leads to some of the impulsive behaviors, some of, you know, it ties into the executive dysfunction, creating more, you know, issues with trying to focus, trying to concentrate. So that's kind of what we're talking about with emotional regulation. And as far as like what parents or just even adults like themselves can do, the biggest thing is slowing down. So whatever it is, mm-hmm. slow it down.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's, you know, we need to slow our breathing down, whether we need to just stop whatever task we're doing, take a break, get some water, go for a walk. You know, there are lots of skills out there that some are more formal than others. Some mm-hmm. are, you know, things like, you know, have a fidget toy, splash your face with cold water, stuff like that.
Okay. Hmm. So we also hear the term, Nikki, distress tolerance. What does that mean?
So those go hand in hand. They're two different things, but they're kind of in the same vein. So distress tolerance is, you know, simply put, just tolerating the distress of the emotional, dysregulation.
Okay.
So those kind of go hand in hand, but they're part of DBT, which is dialectical behavioral therapy, mm-hmm. Which is a spinoff of CBT, which is the cognitive mm-hmm. behavioral
mm-hmm.
therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And so in DBT, they have four main sections. So mindfulness, interpersonal effectiveness. So it was like our relationships, how we interact with people, the emotional regulation and the distress tolerance. And DBT used to be thought of just for people with personality disorders. However, mm-hmm. they've learned that it's really helpful with ADHD because the common thing that, you know, they're not the same personality and ADHD. Nobody hear me say that. Please,
listeners, do not write in and say that that's the same.
But a big part of personality stuff is emotional dysregulation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so they found, oh, okay, these are two types of diagnosis with a similar symptom, and that's why it's helpful for people with ADHD.
So let's walk through a few. You've talked about DBT.
Mm-hmm.
So let's walk through a few practical DBT skills our listeners could start practicing today. Can you explain the STOP skill and when someone should use it?
Okay. We'll skip on to the next one. We'll cut that out, Robin. Okay. So let's go through a few practical DBT skills. You mentioned there was four items that were DBT skills. So a helpful tool that we kind of had talked about off air was the TIP scale, and that's a T-I-P-P scale, or skill, sorry.
Yeah.
What does that involve, Nikki?
So TIP is my favorite because it can hit a lot of things at once. So the T stands for TIP the temperature. So there are some people I've learned in my practice as a psych nurse that cold stuff actually doesn't make them feel better. But the higher percent of people, if we can tip our temperature and get ourselves cooled down, so whether that's ice cold water, taking an ice pack out of the freezer, splashing our face with cold water. Because if we think about when we do become distressed or overwhelmed, our temperature rises because our fight or flight cycle.
We do. Yeah.
The I would be intense exercise. So that could be doing push-ups, that could be jogging in place, going for a brisk walk. The big part about that, again, has to do with our stress cycle, mm-hmm. closing that stress cycle, getting some of that emotional energy we carry in our body out. The other two P's are paced breathing. So there's a couple of breathing techniques that we really rely on in mental health and we use a lot. So it's square breathing and the 4-7-8. And then the last P is progressive muscle relaxation. That's where you squeeze your muscles, hold it, release them. Mm-hmm. And you a lot of times pair that with breathing, and that helps. One, you can see where you're holding tension. Two, it helps you release the tension. I've had patients that, have had cracked teeth because they have so much tension in their jaw.
Mm-hmm.
And we just don't know that we're holding it until we squeeze and release.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It sounds a lot like my yoga sessions, honestly.
Yeah.
It's a mindfulness, and then the breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And breathing in, belly breathing, and then the progressive muscle release. Usually my yoga teacher will go from feet up, mm-hmm. feet to your head and making you focus on it. I didn't realize that was a skill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The big thing with that is that over time we can live in kind of a chronic, like, activated state. So
yeah.
we no longer are, like, in our body fully to, like, notice and even get warning signs that we're kind of amping up emotionally. And I love TIP because it hits, like, several of the genres, the four, like, subtypes parts of DBT. It's one of my favorites. Patients really highly, even the adults that I've worked with, find it very valuable.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
What about grounding exercises? Is there any worth to those? I know it kind of goes along with the breathing and the progressive muscles, but grounding to me is more of an electrical issue. Is that anything that, could be used to help people calm down?
Yeah. So a lot of when I worked outpatient and did group therapy, we talked a lot about skills that you can do. I worked with adults and mainly did that this with them, but I've used it on the inpatient units with the adolescents.
Mm-hmm.
But I really try to think about skills and things and how we can tailor them to our environment. So if we're at school, we're going to do different skills than if we're at home, mm-hmm. or if we're at our job, corporate in a meeting. And so when it comes to grounding, like one of the biggest ones that you can do that people aren't going to just necessarily notice are going to be the 5-4-3-2-1. So it's like five things you can see, four things you can touch, three things you can, I may have lost count. Three things that you can see, touch, smell, feel, and taste.
Okay.
Taste is the last one.
Okay.
And so I would always talk to patients about carrying, like, peppermints, gum, some of them like Warheads. I was like, well, that's a blast from the past. So just some type of candy or something.
Sour Patch Kids.
Because if you're starting to kind of have a meltdown in a meeting and you put a piece of candy or something in your mouth, people aren't going to necessarily think, oh, Emily's breaking down over there.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Well, and we had another family practice doctor that told us last week about how the sour Warheads could stop a panic attack.
Yeah.
That's so maybe exactly
that's
part
why.
Of it.
Yeah.
That's exactly
so
why.
That makes sense. Right?
Yeah, it does make sense. We've learned so much.
I know. Every week we
every
learn something
week
new.
Every week we learn something yeah. new. I love it. I do love it. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay. So if you're a listener, look that up.
Yeah. Don't quote me. I got ahead of myself. Actually, here it is on my computer. So it's 5 things we can see, 4 things we can feel, 3 things we can hear, 2 things we can smell, and 1 thing we can taste.
Okay.
I like it. So control yourself.
Go ahead.
No.
How can parents help children recognize emotions before they become overwhelming?
So that is a double question. The first answer is parents have to be doing some work themselves.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
Because if they are not able to do it for themselves, how can you really teach and model that for your child? And it's very hard. I'm not a parent. Right. I watch, you know, I have most of my friends at this age have kids, my sister, my mom, you know, even talking to my mom. So I know it's very difficult to be a parent and manage everything you have to manage. But really kind of knowing yourself.
Yeah.
Other things, too, are going to be just kind of having the setup. So the environment set up for it. Even like having a few, like, you know, even at work, I'll have a few like lines that I say with certain situations. Mm-hmm. So having some pre-made things to say or like interacting. Also, part of therapy is going to be helping kids to notice when they're kind of on that warning. You know, I talk to patients about early, mid, and late warning signs. If we can get things in the early, mid, we're, you know, we're doing good. We can do something to help ourselves. Typically, you know, this is a myth buster. I should have said it earlier. Misconception is that if you do a skill of any type, coping skill, quote unquote, buzzword, that you will immediately feel better and things are going to be hunky-dory. That's not the case. The whole goal of the skill is to stop you from getting to a place where you can't function. You have a meltdown. You harm, you know, yourself, other people. That's the whole goal of it, is to stop. You may still feel icky.
And but you're not accelerating up to that next level. You're staying at mid or low with your emotions.
Exactly. And if even talking with adults and even adolescents, I've asked before, you know, what's a earlier mid sign? Punch the wall. I said, well, that's a late one. That's late.
Yeah.
But a lot of times if I take patients and what they answer, and I have some people I have to really, you go backwards.
Yeah.
So you think of what your reaction is, and you have to go backwards, and it takes a minute, again, because we're not in our body, we're not present, to notice, oh, well, 30 minutes ago, I was pacing the hallway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And then before that, I reacted to something somebody said. And that's really good, actually, advice. Mm-hmm. I like
that's
that.
Good information.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's good. And then another concept that sometimes confuses parents is validation.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that?
Oh, I love this topic.
Okay.
So it's a skill I learned early on in mental health nursing. There's a difference in validating someone's emotions and validating their behaviors, right? Okay. We don't have to tell someone, you know, make them feel bad or good about a behavior.
Right.
But we can, you know, what led to that behavior is they felt left out or their feelings got hurt.
Right.
Or, you know, they made a bad grade. And so that, you know, shame, guilt, sadness, anger, we can really be like, you know, I know this is, you know, very sad, or I know it's hard to get this bad grade. And then you're able to talk about in a different, you know, maybe the same conversation or a different one a little later on about the behavior, because a lot of times we get focused on the behavior. And so that is all that, you know, whether it's adults, whether it's kids are hearing, you know, stop that, don't do that, like, you know, you're going to get in trouble for this, when it's like there's an emotion attached to it. And we so often forget the emotion. And we think if we validate the emotion, that means we're saying that behavior was okay. And that's not the case. And I will tell patients that.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, Nikki, are there 3 practical strategies that, you know, listeners can begin using this week that, as we wrap up, you can talk about?
Strategies for just behaviors, emotions?
Like for, you know, parents, caregivers, adults living with ADHD.
Yeah. So I think something to that you could do quickly is do a journal assignment for yourself of what are the couple, you know, the top 3 to 5 symptoms that cause dysfunction in your life. Because a lot of times if I were to ask you, if you're sitting in front of me, you would say everything or give, you know, you won't be able to like identify like what are the top ones that bother you or are causing issues. Because if you don't have like a direction or a goal, you can't really do a lot with just, you know, everything distresses me or everything's a symptom for me, organization. So that would be something practical. The other things that I would think about are, instead of stopping quote-unquote behaviors, rechanneling them. Mm-hmm. So if you have a kid that is rip-roaring in the house and wants to, you know, rollerblade and stuff, like try to figure out a way that they can get that same level of energy out, but it's not disruptive to your evening or your floors or, you know, whatnot. So that's a big part of behavior modification, is not necessarily saying no to something. It's shifting it into a healthier, like, way to get that out, get that met. Those were kind of long-winded too. But
No. Nikki, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing all this expertise. This has been actually very helpful in discussion, you know, for our listeners, and we'll leave with a better understanding of ADHD and practical tools they can begin using right away.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Welcome back to Local Matters, Health Matters. Today, we've been talking about raising emotionally resilient kids, and we're joined by Abby Fowler, who's a licensed professional counselor with Wildly Curative. And so, Abby, in this last segment, can we talk a little bit about confidence and self-esteem? And mainly wanting to know, like, what are some of the biggest challenges to children's confidence today?
I think social media, absolutely, across the board. And like we were talking about earlier, just struggling with disappointment, normalizing that we can't win everything, we can't always get everything right and be perfect. There's just a lot of high expectations for kids these days.
There are a lot of high expectations. I don't remember it being that way when I grew up. I mean,
me either.
There was a couple friends on my street, you know, that I hung out with, you know, and I would get jealous if they had a better Barbie house than I did. No, seriously. You know what I'm saying?
But there's the connection with social media and phones and things now that you didn't have.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. But you guys know me. I don't have a difficulty with confidence as a person now, but and my children don't either. So, you know, it just makes me wonder, how do you, that confidence, you know, about encouraging that with children, and then social media being a factor there, that they're seeing things that aren't real,
right?
That's not reality.
Absolutely,
9 times out of 10. And I want parents to hear that too, out in the Upper Cumberland, from Abby and I and Emily, you know, it's normal to have feelings,
absolutely,
and it's normal to have changes in your voice.
Yeah,
you ever notice that on social media, how people's inflection, it never, sometimes those never change.
Well, like you said earlier, when you're really happy or you're really sad, you put these big things on there. You don't put the normal everyday, like, hey, absolutely, everybody, I just vacuumed my whole house.
Right.
We cleaned the toilets. You know, thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
Yeah, going
it's a
good.
Highlight reel.
You know?
And for kids, it's like the unboxing and seeing just kids getting just tons of laboo-boos or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know if those are still even popular anymore, because it moves so quickly.
Yeah.
And you can feel behind so fast.
Ooh, that's good. You feel behind. Yeah. I didn't feel behind as a little kid.
I forgot that was a really big thing. And I guess it was on YouTube first.
Mm-hmm.
The unboxing stuff. Mm-hmm. Kids made unreal amounts of money unboxing all these toys and things. Yeah, that was a big thing.
Well, even our producer's nodding her head.
Uh-huh.
So I'm thinking my kids, even though they're in their adults, they open Pokemon cards online. Sorry, that's probably, probably
it's
telling them too
evolved.
Much information.
Yeah, so talk
evolved.
About disappointment.
It is. It is. Exactly. Yeah. I'm like, why do you do that? They're like, well, it's just cool. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
But that's that.
Yeah, like this kid has so much of this. Why don't
right,
I?
Right. Right.
Yeah. And even the kid that sits next to me in class has this. Why don't I? Or.
Yeah. Know, and we don't realize what we have.
Yeah.
And appreciate it. So,
absolutely.
And I do think that goes back to the parents as well.
Yeah.
Or whoever they're with. It may not be a parent, maybe a caregiver, a grandparent, sure. Yeah. Siblings, older siblings, who knows?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So that kind of explains social media, mm-hmm. And that constant comparison mm-hmm. that affects yeah. children and teenagers emotionally. What about the difference between building genuine confidence and simply just praising everything a child does? Because I have seen that too, where, you know, oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you're wonderful.
Yeah,
and
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between that?
Yeah, I think so. It's a little bit different at home, I'm sure, than in the playroom, of course. But
right.
whenever a kid asks me if I love it, I'm like, what do you think about it? I'm like, I love it. I was like, you are so proud of yourself. It's not about me. It's about how you feel.
Yeah.
And it's different for parents, right?
Right.
But I think.
But they're not expecting praise from you.
Right.
They're giving praise to themselves.
To themselves.
That's what I'm hearing.
Ooh, right. And so like parents that. Can find a balance mm-hmm. of making sure they are proud of themselves first before mm-hmm. you assign praise to something.
That's really good.
It is good. I like that.
Dang, Abby, that's good.
Thanks. Darn. Too bad my kids are almost grown.
I know. Mine are grown and flown, so yeah. But no, that's a big difference, though, between that building confidence and then just praising everything.
Right.
Having mm-hmm. the child be proud of themselves.
Yeah. And the difference between you worked really hard and that looks perfect, or you got 100, that's awesome. Like, you worked really hard. You studied really hard.
Mm-hmm. You earned that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good.
How can parents encourage independence while still providing support for their kids?
That's a tough one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think encouraging them to do things on their own after you've done with. So I think,
yes.
I can't remember that phrase, but it's like do for, do with. And I can't remember the third thing.
We say show one.
See one, do one,
yeah.
teach one. That's what we say
Maybe
in nursing.
Maybe that's what I'm trying to figure mm-hmm. out. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, like, helping them with that and then encouraging them next time, like, you got this. Let's see how we can do this together. And mm-hmm. then, like, you've got this.
Yeah.
Let's see
I'm
if
thinking,
you can do
like,
it.
Cooking. Like,
yeah.
your kids watched you cook.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they've cooked alongside you. And now it's like, hey, maybe you could make this
Absolutely.
Macaroni and cheese tonight. Or, you know.
Absolutely.
And then that's going to be confidence. Too.
Absolutely.
Building that independent confidence that they can do it.
Absolutely.
Because I do see parents tend to want to do everything for their child.
Yes. And
that's just it's normal. It's normal
for sure.
Because I'm wanting to
love them.
Exactly.
And you want them to be okay.
Now listen, I think there's reasons behind that.
That was Emily.
Because I get in trouble a lot for doing stuff for my teenage daughter. Sometimes it's just easier for me to do it myself.
Right.
I know.
Makes sense to
and
me.
I'm not saying that I don't know that they should be doing it.
So, but we're talking about
the best
gaining,
way. This
no,
is not the best way.
No, gaining independence, that child
yes.
learning independence
right.
from you, that when they're not with you, they're able to function.
Absolutely.
Is that right?
On their own.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Raising them to be adult people.
So, can counseling help children before problems become severe, Abby?
Absolutely. I'm a huge advocate for early intervention.
Okay.
Whether something big, life-altering has happened or not,
okay.
I think early intervention is the way to go. And I've said this a few times today, like, it's never too late. Like, it's
yeah,
never
right.
too late to address something and to heal. But it absolutely can teach them skills so that we don't go too long with not knowing how to cope with something. It's like if we can learn these skills and address what's happened or just address
right.
what's going on,
right.
then they'll feel more confident. They'll be able to bounce back whenever the next hard thing
and
comes
along. Independent.
And be independent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For all the feelings. That's why I keep hearing from you is
yeah.
we need to feel all the feelings
yeah.
and recognize them.
Absolutely. All feelings are good feelings, even if they're hard.
Yeah.
I don't we have to
yeah.
feel them.
Yeah.
It's just normal.
It is. So, Abby, tell us what typically happens during a child's first counseling appointment.
Yeah.
What would that look like?
Yeah. So typically what I do is the first session is with the parents or the caregiver,
okay.
whoever
mm-hmm.
the guardian is. So I'll meet with them first because it's not fair for a kid to have to sit and listen to whatever yeah. the parent needs. And that gives yeah. the parent space to just talk about what they need and what they need help with and what's going on with their kiddo. And then the first time I see a kid, whatever age they are, whether they're 3 or 13, I bring them in and I explain to them what to expect, right?
Yeah.
Which is, hey, you're going to come in here and we can talk or we can play or we can draw and you get to choose and here you get to decide. And so it's just getting to know the kid for the first mm-hmm. few sessions, seeing what they need. And then if they need to learn skills, I help them with that, help the parents practice it with them too. But yeah, it all just starts with just getting to know the kid first.
Yeah.
So how are parents then involved in this process?
Yeah,
I know you meet with them at first,
right.
but how about later on?
Yeah, I think it's important for me at least to do regular parent sessions. So like every fourth okay. or fifth session, so 4 or 5 weeks, once a month maybe, I have a parent meeting where they come in and we talk about what's going on. Are they seeing progress? Does it all feel the same? And so that way we have a regular meeting set where we're always on the same page.
Okay. And what would you say to families who may feel hesitant or nervous about bringing their child into counseling?
Yeah, I would say that's normal.
Okay.
It's normal to be confused about what to expect. It's normal to be concerned about going and talking to a stranger.
And that's why we brought you in, Miss Abby. Yes.
Right.
But tell listeners again where you're located and how they can get in contact with you guys.
Absolutely. So we are at Wildly Curative. We're on Main Street in Allgood, right next to the Sonic out there.
Okay.
And they can find us online, on Facebook, or on Psychology Today.
Oh, okay. So, mm-hmm. And it's Wildly Curative.
Yeah.
All one word, or is it two separate words?
Two separate words.
Okay. Yep. All right.
Okay. So, Abby, our next section is a rapid fire, fact, fiction, or it depends. So, mm-hmm. we're going to finish with a quick round of this. So, for each statement, you tell us whether it's fact, fiction, or it depends. And then if it depends, you can explain whatever
okay.
needs to be.
I'm ready.
So the first one, children should never see their parents cry.
Fiction. I think it's good and healthy.
Yes.
To
it shows
certain,
that they can, express emotion.
Absolutely.
Yep. The next one, it's best to distract children from difficult emotions.
Fiction. Definitely.
Yeah, I think that goes back when you talked about your emotional resilience
mm-hmm.
from the get-go. Meltdowns are always bad behavior.
I'm going to say fiction for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely not always.
Although sometimes I might have left the grocery store or something during a meltdown.
mm-hmm. Right.
You know, that's okay. You're removing that child.
I removed them from the situation.
From that situation. And you're removing
outside.
Yourself from mm-hmm. the situation.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Okay, next one. Deep breathing really can help children calm down.
Fact.
Fact.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We talked about breathing. Praising every accomplishment builds self-esteem.
I want to say fiction.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. we talked about that. It's okay for children to fail sometimes.
Fact. For sure.
Fact.
Therapy is only for children with serious mental illness.
Fiction.
Fiction.
100% mm-hmm. fiction.
What about screen time can affect emotional regulation?
Fact.
Fact. So before we wrap up, if you could leave parents with 3 practical things they can begin doing today to help raise emotionally healthy and resilient children, what would those 3 things be?
I would say take time to help them calm down, with doing it with them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Tell them what they're doing well. Don't just catch them being bad, but catch them being good. And then normalize all the feelings.
Very like nice. It. Very nice.
Mm-hmm. Great advice. Abby, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been such a valuable conversation, and we appreciate you sharing practical strategies that parents and caregivers can start using right away.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Until next time, Local Matters, Health Matters.